Ladies and gentlemen, you are about to witness some scenes from the next attraction to play this theater. This picture, truly one of the most unusual ever filmed, contains scenes which under no circumstances should be viewed by anyone with a heart condition or anyone who is easily upset. We urgently recommend that if you are such a person or the parent of a young or impressionable child now in attendance, that you and the child leave the auditorium for the next 90 seconds.
Hola, amigos. Welcome to another episode of the Video Nasty Project. Tonight, the biggest horror movie icon that you have never heard of, Paul Naschy, he's back on the list because tonight we're going to be watching The Blue Eyes of the Broken Doll. That's right, kids. It's giallo time. Why don't we fire up the trailer?
Are you jealous?
I'm not the same as my sister.
Son of a bitch. He wasn't satisfied with just killing her. He gouged out her eyes.
The Blue Eyes of the Broken Doll.
Good morning, Pierre.
Good morning, Doctor. We need you down at the morgue. He's committed another killing.
The Blue Eyes of the Broken Doll. The Blue Eyes of the Broken Doll, with Paul Naschy, Diana Lorries, and Maria Pershey. Eyes of the Broken Doll.
And welcome back. This is the gush about Paul Naschy because he's fucking awesome half hour. So you want to tell us about what's going on?
Okay, so Paul, I can't remember the character name.
Paul Naschy, international man of mystery and occasional werewolf.
Yeah, walks into a town somewhere in the French countryside, some small town. It comes to this bar where he's immediately in that kind of American Werewolf in London, stranger in a country place, what the fuck is this guy doing here kind of deal.
And so Paul, he's all like, hey, I'm just new in town. I need a job. What can you do for me? And the barmaid's like, no job for you here, foreigner. Get the hell out.
Until somebody mentions, oh, well, maybe you should wait until this woman comes in the town.
The
three sisters. And one of the sisters blows into town from their villa looking, you know, for whatever. And the guy mentions, maybe you can get some work with them.
And so that's where we meet Claude, the first of the three sisters.
Those three sisters are odd. They're strange. They're weird. That's kind of how they're presented.
Right.
But when and this is a conversation going on between the town constable, the police officer, and the gal who runs the bar. And he's kind of like, yeah, you're right. But later he's all, I'm your friend.
Well, they're very small town folks. Yeah. So there's a certain mindset that goes with that.
Yeah. Also, this cop says he's seen Paul someplace before. Can't picture where. And Paul keeps having nightmares or reveries of strangling a blonde, blue-eyed woman.
Yeah, it's like this big, empty room that's like filled with red lighting. Yeah. And it's kind of silhouette and shadows. And so Paul, he's walking along and hitchhiking and gets picked up by Claude, who says, you know, hey, come on up to the villa. We need a handyman. You look like you're a handyman. We could give you a job. And so off he goes to meet the other two sisters. So we've got, we should mention, Claude, she has a prosthetic hand. Some sort of accident that is kind of alluded to, but never really clearly defined. And so she's got like this burn up her arm and like missing three of her four fingers. Yeah. And with this deformity comes all sorts of self-esteem issues.
Insecurity,
Yeah. She thinks she's ugly. No man will want her. This is hideous. That sort of thing.
So she's extremely standoffish, but serviceable. She's takes immediately to Paul, thinks he'd be a good fit around the house helping their invalid sister, who's in a wheelchair.
Yvette,
yes.
And then the other sister of the three is the nympho. The horn dog, I gotta get me a man, I gotta get me some D.
And is probably the real focal point of the animosity that Claude has. Because, I mean, she goes so far as, everyone's going to bed for the night. I'm going to go lock my sister in her room.
And so Paul settles in and starts doing what Paul Nashy does best, tapping that ass.
Oh, yeah.
That is so misogynistic, but okay.
It's true, though. Every Paul Nashy movie we have seen has had him just slaying the ladies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so Paul sets about slaying the ladies.
They can't keep their hands off him, except for Claudette. And eventually, you know, like all things European, you know, something goes one way, then it's going to completely 360 and go, or what?
He doesn't get the nurse.
He tries really hard, but he doesn't get the nurse.
Yeah.
But he gets to the three. And I liked when eventually his biggest conquest of the movie is getting with Claude. And up to this point, she's had like her hair tied back in a really tight bun, and she's very uptight and prim and proper and very aloof.
Paul isn't actually a decent guy because right off the bat, he asks her what's up with her hand, and she says that, oh, she's hideous, and he says, no, you're not. He doesn't find anything wrong with her. Okay, so she's got a prosthetic thing. He doesn't find it, you know, detracting at all from her beauty.
And after Paul has an actual affectionate, genuine relationship with her. I mean, he starts kissing her deformed hand. He starts making a physical connection, and he pulls her hair down, and it comes off her shoulder, and she's got this long, flowing red hair. And from that point on, she is sexually liberated.
Yeah.
She's coming out of her shell, and her hair reflects it. Her demeanor and her personality reflects it. And I thought that was a really nice touch.
Yeah. I think that basically this moves on to the point where the one plot point that pisses me off the most. And that's Claude. They do a good job of establishing her insecurities.
No man will love me.
She's had a man leave her.
Because of the accident.
Because of the accident. And we see her, she's becoming a real person who doesn't have any problems. The man that she's fallen in love with gets killed. Both of her sisters get killed. The doctor whom she has trusted turns out to be the killer who had duped her sister into being a killer.
And now she's all alone.
And now she's all alone again. So all of the things that establish her as a person early in the film have been reset to that and made even worse.
And the big spoiler of the movie is that it turns out Paul is in fact has a history that he is running from. He strangled his old girlfriend and did a stint in prison.
And he was a rapist.
And so he was trying to be better. And I really like that about the character. He's has this dark past. He's struggling with it. He's because we see that in the flashbacks. But he's trying to be better because he's has a relationship with Claude that he actually cares about her.
The first killing happens. You immediately are like, is he the killer? And you don't have anything immediately that sets off the, nah, might not be. It's like, it's got to be him.
Well, the movie sets up the red herring thing really well, but then it also gives you a whole truckload of guys to choose from. It could be the constable. It could be Charles, the former handyman, or, you know, man about the manor who got kicked out for whatever reason. He comes
after
in,
he tries to attack Paul.
He tries to kill him right off the bat. He just jumps over the wall and immediately attacks him with a knife. You know, a big double bladed dagger. Yeah. And then there's the doctor, you know, who could be this Lothario, you know, by night, because the women are attracted to him because he's successful and middle aged, and, you know, that used to say, you know, wealthy. Yeah. You know.
And then we have any of the three sisters it could be. So there is probably 10 or so red herrings above and beyond Paul in this movie. Anyway, so as the movie progresses and you get this bevy of red herrings, you get a mad killer running around and murdering people, blonde women, and he's removing their eyes. I really liked the, during the murder scenes, the Farah Jacka. Was creepy as fuck. Well,
that music, actually, most of the time I watch these things, I can't remember a damn thing about the music, but that got under my skin, the way they just corrupted that song right off the bat. And they do have a limited amount of musical tracks here, like 6 or 7, and they just keep using them over and over again, the main theme and the Frère Jacques.
Oh, God, above and beyond the Frère Jacques, I fucking hated the music in this thing. It's you're saying 6 tracks. I think that's being exceptionally generous. Yeah. I think they have like 2 tracks and then Frère Jacques. So they have 3 tracks. And it's just this kind of rom-com, bouncy, almost comedic, goofy.
Saw a popular bit of music from the 70s. And I'm suddenly drawing a blank on the dang artist. But it had a very torrid, the album had a very torrid cover. It was a girl covered in whipping cream.
Oh, Herb Albert.
Herb Albert. But anyway, the music had that which was why I thought Herb Albert.
Taste of Honey.
Yeah, a little bit. Okay, you know,
Rick Marlowe.
Yeah, it really does sound like A Taste of Honey. Holy shit, you're right. I didn't make that connection until just now.
And the thing I found really frustrating with the music is that it would have that going, and where you have these where the visual on the screen is supposed to be is building of suspense, and you've got and then every so often, just briefly, it would stop, and it would be dun dun dun, and then
So yes, the music completely undercuts any tension and mood this movie has.
Yeah,
and a lot of movies have used that style of music with their murders and stuff. That definitely was not an isolated thing.
There are only 2 things that I don't like about the movie.
I think it's the same 2 things I don't like.
Probably. Let's find out. So, the music is 1. Can't stand the music aside from Frère Jacques.
Mm-hmm.
The other one is that after the movie is wrapping up and you get the doctor comes in and does Psycho, where he basically explains everything that's going on and lays everything out in this absolutely show-stopping scene of exposition.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, that did not need to be there.
That is a problem. I have a problem with that as well. No, my problem was that they do a good job of developing this point of, even though there's a red herring and you have that bit of doubt because of the red herring, Paul Nashie's character, you actually hit a point where you're like, I feel sorry for this guy. I'm liking him. There's actually been nothing demonstrated that he's the killer other than subtle hint and
sordid
past. And basically the constable finally comes to the realization that his initial thought of who the killer is turns out to be false because the guy's lying dead in a cornfield or whatever it was. So he calls Claude to tell Claude, oh, I'm on my way up to talk to him.
And then Claude says, you know, Paul, you got to get the hell out of here because the cops are on the way.
And he hits the ground running after he digs out a gun that he's had hidden. And there's a shootout, and of course, he dies. And what comes to pass in that final 20 minutes is that he's done nothing wrong other than he served his prison time and he was simply trying to make a clean cut of it. He'd done nothing wrong. That's what pisses me off.
But that's what makes a really good film.
Yeah, exactly.
The wrong guy.
And that what proves that Paul Naschy is a vastly underrated actor, because he manages to engender sympathy while still portraying this dark edge and this mystery past. He managed to play both sides of the coin and still be affectionate with Claude.
And then we get on to...
The Doctor.
The Doctor. Who isn't actually the only killer?
But, and this is the part that's really good, is the Doctor's guilt was laid out early in the film, even if nobody knew it, because he talked about his daughter, who had this debilitating thing happen to her in surgery where she lost her sight.
And his pocket watch, which was playing Frère Jacques.
Yep.
And so it turns out that about halfway through this movie, you'll realize who the killer is. And then at the end of the movie, you'll realize that you were fucking wrong, because you're both right and wrong at the same time, because the Doctor has been hypnotizing the wheelchair-bound one to go kill in his name.
Which is why we keep hearing the Frère Jacques music every time the killer is out.
Because that's the trigger.
That's, you've been hypnotized, when you hear this music, go kill. Follow the music, kill the and I was just like, holy shit, that is very well constructed for story, but it just,
okay, fine, you know, we figured out who the proper killer is, and then this little baits and switch ass pull thing.
There is some very good setup for that, since the Doctor was saying that the one sister's illness is psychosomatic. She thinks she's crippled. She's really not.
Yeah, they established that early on.
So when she's up and walking without the damn chair, you go, oh, okay, right. Yeah. And so that lays out his guilt along with everything else that should be attached to him, even though I didn't connect the threads until the end. And it's like, oh, okay, I should have seen that coming.
So I want to get into the how well shot this movie is. Now, it's not quite on the level of your other giallos like your Argentos and stuff. But scenes like where Paul is coming up the stairs in the darkness and Yvette is in the wheelchair. And it's the hallway is dark and you hear the thunder going off in the background. You only see a silhouette and you're thinking, oh shit, it's on now. And then the flashlight and it's Paul, but it's Paul not being threatening.
And it's after Yvette has stood up and takes a step and collapses.
And I thought that scene was really well done. Or like you get scenes where the murder of the girl that's in the wine cellar and the killer is coming after her with this kind of rake tine sort of thing, a hand rake. Yeah. And you get the splashes of blood on like glass and you see the hand rake going across the glass, kind of implying it's her being slashed. I thought that was really clever.
Yeah. And then when Yvette and the nurse go at it and they take each other down the stairs, I thought, that's a really well done stunt. I didn't know whether they'd got stunt women to do that or if the actresses themselves did it.
Looked like they actually had the actresses themselves do it.
Because they fucked each other up.
So this is a really well put together flick on pretty much all those levels.
Oh, yeah, technically.
One of the middle deaths where it's just a unnamed town person who dies and it's in the alleyway and it cuts to the wide shot. And you have the victim lying on the ground, and in the shadows, you can see that the killer's still standing there, and it's this wide shot, and it's lit with, the stairwell is lit, cross-hatching the shot, and it's just like, I'm like, damn, this guy,
he knows his shit.
Knew his shit. It's just like, this is a good shot.
So what about the gore? What did you guys think about the gore effects in this thing?
I mean, the eyes were definitely done. I mean, clearly they had somebody who knew, you know, how to... They either got actual eyes from like a sheep or something like that, like they sometimes did in horror movies in those days. Or maybe they got a corpse or something like that, like some movies did, like Men Behind the Sun and Thriller, A Cruel Picture, where they just used a corpse and did nasty stuff to it. I mean, I thought that was really good.
That one scene where after the former gardener attacks Paul and gives him that nasty cut right on his rib cage, and the after effects of where the nurse and everybody is fawning over him and patching him back up together, I thought the gore of that cut looked really good. And I mean, yeah. I remember you going, ew.
Yeah.
Although I could see how it was done. But
you could totally see how it was done.
Yeah. The initial viewing, it's like the very first time we see our killer with eyes in there in the palms of their hand. That initial scene, that first scene was,
You know, and I didn't have any flinch factor about any of the fake gore simply because I watch movies like that a lot.
Well, yeah.
You know, and when you've seen Tom Savini movies, you tend to be kind of spoiled. I don't think
anybody at the stable is going to be blanching at, you know, eyeballs that are kind of dumpling shaped.
Or the cut.
I was just appreciating that the cut was really well done.
It's good. It's a good effect.
I think the scenes where the eyes are initially shown, I think if the shots weren't so lengthy, show it, cut away from it. Beautiful film, beginning to end. Editing is well done throughout for the most part. It's just there where you held that shot too long. If you'd cut away quicker, we would have been good.
I think the other, speaking of pacing and stuff, I think the other thing that it doesn't necessarily, I wouldn't call it a flaw with the movie, but this movie is definitely a slow burn. We take about 40 minutes, 45 minutes before we get to our first actual on-screen murder.
Yeah, I mean, this is clearly made for an audience that can appreciate the buildup and get into. I mean, this is an adult film for people who like adult drama, and then they throw in the murders, and it's not the instant gratification, boom, boom, boom kind of thing. It's not porn. It's erotica by comparison, you know, where you get something more than just the quick fix.
I liked the acting all around on the three sisters. Mm-hmm. I thought the acting was really strong.
This isn't a pet peeve. This is just being now looking at it from the critical standpoint of character development and whatnot. There was a little bit of it, and it was understandable, and I don't mind that they chose to do it this way. But Yvette didn't have a lot of character construction because they utilized her being in a wheelchair to demonstrate who she was.
She's not a character. She's a MacGuffin.
Good point.
Well, the wheelchair is camouflage.
Yeah. Well, yeah, no, I mean, for the development of the red herring that the red herrings are leading away from, it says, oh, no, she's actually the killer.
And she uses the wheelchair to kill the nurse, which I didn't see that coming. I thought it was going to be the knife, you know, and then she kind of got clever by putting the knife in the nurse's hand after they've done their tussle.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So the way that the doctor was describing the knife attack was like, well, it couldn't have been her because it was a downward stab into his back, not an upward from the gut. It wasn't, the angle of the knife was all wrong.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no, that was exceptionally clever.
The camera work is really solid. I like the exterior shots, the countryside, you know, the difference between town, which is a country town, and then the outskirts where the big mansion is.
So you got anything else left you got to get off your chest?
Just that the whole bit of his dying pissed me off. It's a good plot point, plot device. It's a well-told story. He's just like, he didn't do anything wrong.
Paul did not deserve that ending.
He just had that knee-jerk reaction of, the cops know my past. They're convinced I'm the killer. I'm going to run.
All right, then. That sounds like that, then. So, seaworthy or let the shopkeeper keep Blue Eyes of the Broken Doll?
It's tame. This is amongst many of the ones that are actually pretty tame. I mean, the only thing that really, really sends it over the top that could probably make somebody upset is the eyes.
And even that, the eyes are not very convincing at all to anyone with a pair of eyes that isn't in the palm of their hands.
Yeah.
So, Caesar keep.
If there was a cruelty-free version, I'd say keep. They should put a caveat, animal cruelty, on this. So, at your own risk, I would say keep with that warning on there.
If you take the animal snuff off the table, this is a reasonably tame giallo compared to the other crazy shit that we've seen so far. The animal snuff makes it a no-go for me.
I'm going to counter that with, it isn't animal snuff. It's not. They're butchering an animal to cook it. That's literally what they're doing. It's not presented in any other way. It is literally what farmers around the world have been doing for centuries.
I don't want to see it.
I understand that, but it's not animal snuff.
Well, the question is, are they doing it in a matter-of-fact way, or are they doing it as part of the story, or were they? Is it something they could have not done to begin with and just...
It was gratuitous. It was gratuitous. It was something that would normally, in a community like that, probably happen daily. But the point is it was simply done for the shock value of, oh, look, blood.
And at the end of the day, they took a real pig and they killed a real pig. It doesn't matter if they do it all the time or if it was...
I'm not going to use it to qualify the film as being seasonable.
And that's why we're doing this by committee, so we can have the diversity of opinion, no matter how wrong they are. Did you like Blue Eyes of the Broken Doll?
I did, for the most part. With that one exception of the animal cruelty, I liked it enough to see it twice. Maybe possibly even own it someday, but at this point I'm still kind of iffy about it, but more than meh.
Did you like it?
I like the film. Happy to rewatch it. The story is pretty solid.
It's really entertaining. It's got sleaze, it's got nudity, it's got motherfucking Paul Naschy. What's not to like?
Quality of the story writing was good. There's just plot points that piss me off.
I mean, it is a good red herring movie. I mean, I suspected everybody at the beginning. I mean, always suspect everybody in a Euro.
So at the end of the day, there is a great deal to recommend in this movie.
Go see this film.
Really? Yeah, pick up the movie.
Find it, watch it. It's a good film.
All right, so we liked it all around. Go, Paul. Sadly, that's the last of the Paul Naschy flicks on the list. But if what we've been talking about even remotely sounds interesting to you, do yourself a solid and pick yourself up the two Shout Factory discs that came out a year or so ago. If you like horror movies and stuff like this, and this is your bread and butter, these things are tight. But that's for the future. Next week, which I suppose technically is still the future, we're going to be taking a look at the Arthur Davis Mondo movie, Brutes and Savages. God help us all. So, drop us an email. You know what to do at this point. TheVideoNastyProject@gmail.com, and we'll catch you next week. Stay evil.